Welcome to the Digicom Cafe, located at the intersection of faith and technology. We hope you enjoy your cafe experience where we cater to your digital and spiritual appetites, and build interest in the amateur radio hobby, one story at a time. Please stand by as we get ready to launch this episode of Radio on the Rocks. You are about to listen to a Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast interview, which occurred on April 1, 2019 in the Digicom Cafe, with Danny J, KD5DLJ, and guest Don Wilbanks, AE5DW of Picayune, Mississippi.
Welcome to the Digicom Cafe and the Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast with Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. Of Louisiana, or is it Mississippi, Don?
Well, it's a little of both. I'm from Oklahoma, but I live in Mississippi and I work in Louisiana. So,
All right.
So there you go.
Well, everybody knows you, knows what you're doing with the different platforms you work with, Amateur Radio Newsline, Ham Nation. But maybe a lot of people don't know about how you got into our hobby. So that's what we do here in our Cafe Cast, is just have people tell their story. How you got started in amateur radio, what it's meant to you in your life, and what you're most passionate about in it at this point in time. So go ahead, tell your story.
Well, thanks, Danny. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, radio has always been important to me. I can remember as a very, very young child, almost a toddler, my parents never had the television on in the morning. I always woke up to the radio. The radio was always on in the car, so it was always radio. In fact, by the time I was 10 years old, I told my parents that I would be the voice coming out of their radio one day. And I've been in broadcasting since I got out of high school in 1978. But before that, obviously, the CB radios and stuff is what got me into the hobby. As a little kid, my parents got me some little walkie-talkies, little 100 milliwatt channel 14 walkie-talkies, and that was my foray into it. Besides talking to my buddy across the street, I would hear other voices, and I discovered fairly quickly that I could talk to them, and they all had these interesting nicknames, and I later found out those were called handles, and I said, well, gosh, I need a handle. And the brand of the little walkie-talkie was Comet, so I figured, well, that's as good as anything, and it says it right there on my radio, so I'll be Comet. And I was probably, 12, 13 years old, so it would have been 72, 73. And then the CB radio craze really hit, in the mid-70s, and got heavily involved in that with local clubs and a little bit of storm chasing and whatnot. But my first introduction to ham radio was actually through a fellow CB-er. Her mother was a ham, and we'd go out to her house occasionally, and that's where I saw my first ham shack. And she never had the radio on when I was there, but it was sitting there, and I'd talk to her a little bit about it. And then another club member whose call sign was Whiskey Delta 5 Charlie Delta Victor. His name was Bob Quigley. Bob got me really interested in ham radio and convinced me that I should go and take the license test. So I was studying for that in 1975 as a 15-year-old, and I got sidetracked. I like to say I got overcome by fumes, perfume and exhaust fumes. So girls in cars at 15 and a half, 16, got to be more important than Morse code and theory. So I put the ham radio stuff aside and literally, seriously got involved in the broadcasting end of it and electronics. Got into broadcasting in 78, right out of high school, and then moved to New Orleans in 83. And in 95, 20 years after I had first started thinking seriously about ham radio, my wife and I were going somewhere with her uncle, and he had a small handheld VHF, UHF radio with him, and I thought it was a business band radio. And I said, oh, that's for your work. And he said, no, that's ham radio. And I went, really? I was just getting into that 20 years ago, and for some reason got sidetracked. He said, well, you should get back into it. So I did. Took the license exam and became a technician back in January of 95. So it would have been November of 94 that I took the test. Got my first ticket in January of 95, got involved immediately in Amateur Radio Newsline, and the rest is kind of history. I jumped into the middle of that, and here I am now, doing all kinds of stuff that I never thought I would, never even dreamed I'd be able to do, and meeting people that I never dreamed I'd ever meet. And just, it's ham radio has just is absolutely changed my life. And it's one of it's a strange thing. Back when I told my wife I was going to study for my ham radio ticket, she had no clue what ham radio was. And so I told her, and she thought, okay, well, it's going to be just another hobby that he'll get into for, you know, 6 months, a year, and then he'll lose interest. And she's told me several times, she's like, I never dreamed that you would spend this much time and effort and energy, and that this hobby would be such a huge part of all of our lives. She was studying for the test, and never quite got her ticket. She got sidetracked on some of the technical aspects of the test and ended up taking the technician test three times one night, and after the third time she said, well, that's it, I've lost interest in it. I keep telling her I'd be more than happy to help her get her ticket. My son got his ticket about a year and a half ago as a technician, and she would be sitting in the other room listening to us talk about licensing and me teaching him, basically. And she said it was amazing how much of the stuff came back to her, but she still has no interest. But my son is a ham. His call is November 7, Tango Mike Whiskey. So very proud of him.
Yeah, we've been following that whole story, and I understand he's in college and doesn't have much time for it, but at least he got his ticket. My wife got her license as a gift to me for our anniversary several years back. She never really has used it other than when I force her to, but she does not like to talk on the radio, but definitely loves the fact that I have this as a hobby, and I'm sure you can testify to the fact that there are some wonderful people out there that have become good friends, lifelong friends, as a result of this hobby, and you obviously are partnering with several of your friends to add value to our hobby.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, speaking of that, the lifelong friends thing, I took Tyler to Dayton Hamvention. I didn't go last year, so I guess it was 2 years ago, a couple of years ago, whenever it was the last time I went. And it was obviously his first time going, and it was a great experience for him because he got to dress up in a pig costume, and he walked around as a mascot. He walked around Dayton as a mascot for my friend Neil Rapp's podcast, which is called Ham Talk Live. So Tyler was the pig and walked around Dayton, the Hamvention, dressed up as a pig. But my friend Simon was visiting from New Zealand. He was, in fact, staying in the same hotel as us. And so it was funny. I woke up one morning, and I think it was Saturday morning, and Tyler was nowhere to be found. And this was before he got his ticket. He wasn't licensed at that point, so it must have been 2 years ago. And so I text him on the phone, and I'm like, where are you? He says, I'm downstairs having breakfast with Simon. And I'm like, oh, great. So my son now has a friend on the other side of the world. That absolutely no way he would have ever met Simon had it not been for my involvement, I guess, and his as well now in amateur radio. But it was so funny. I walked downstairs and there they are sitting there together eating waffles. And I said, I'm so glad you both found a little friend. So yeah, you make lifelong friendships, and some of those people you never meet. You just talk to them only on the air, and others you're lucky enough to meet face-to-face and really enhance your relationship with them. And I'm extremely lucky to be involved with Ham Nation, to, you know, have Bob Heil and Gordon West as friends. And, you know, I've just been infinitely blessed to be a part of that group. It's a life-changing hobby, and I thoroughly recommend it to anybody. And I've told my son Tyler there are very good chances that, you know, him having that call sign on his resume might make the difference between him getting a job or not getting a job. So it's amazing the doors that amateur radio can open for you.
Yeah, well, you've had some pretty big doors open for you that keep you very busy. I kind of wonder how you ever get time to enjoy ham radio. Do you struggle with
it? I don't. That's the thing. I finally worked the CQ worldwide WPX contest for the first time this past weekend, I made one contact to K3LR to talk to the youth operating team, Team Exuberance there, and I got them on the first call Friday night on 40 meters, and that was the extent of my contesting for the weekend. That was the only contact I made. I am, however, getting into D-Star and DMR, and I've got a couple of hot spots, and I've been spending a little bit more time on DMR, and that's been a lot of fun. So I'm exploring that. But no, I don't get to operate too much. I don't have a radio in my car right now, so I'm hoping that I can get the digital hotspot up and running, so I can at least, if I want to, tether that to my iPhone and be able to do a little bit of talking. But no, I just don't have time. And plus, with my commute, I've got a 125-mile daily commute to and from work, so that eats up, you know, an hour and a half in the morning and an hour and a half in the afternoon. And so, I have to budget my time between the production stuff that I do with Newsline and Ham Radio or Ham Nation, and then the family time and work and everything else. It's a balancing act.
Yeah. Well, those hours driving would be perfect for using things like Zello or some of these other digital modes. Take your hotspot with you, tether it to your phone, and communicate on DMR to some of the groups. So you've got a lot of time there you could use for it. What do you think of all this digital technology, too, by the way? Do you think it's hurting amateur radio as we've known it?
No, absolutely not. I see it as just another mode. Any way to get people interested in the hobby is a great way, and I think it's a great way to get youth interested. I mean, every kid pretty much has a smartphone, so every kid has access to Zello or Echolink, or there are probably other platforms as well that you can use on iPhone or Android. But I don't think it's a detriment at all. To me, it's just another mode, and it's any way to get people interested in the hobby. It's like, you know, for me, CB radio was a gateway drug to ham radio, so there's no reason that Zello or any of these other peer-to-peer messaging platforms that can connect to ham radio, they can become a gateway drug to ham radio as well. So, no, I don't think it's a bad thing at all.
Very good. Very good point. Well, you know, a lot of young people have their phones. That's what they have in common. And they have all these other platforms where they don't need a license. What would you give as a reason why they might want to consider getting an amateur radio license? What's the benefit?
Well, we found it seems like there's a pretty good ham radio presence in a lot of these maker fairs. And, you know, the maker fairs are not for ham radio, but they dovetail with the hobby very, very well, because, you know, ham radio started out as experimenters. The first makers were hams. That's just the way it is. So it dovetails quite nicely, and the people who are interested in any type of electronics or computer network working, for the most part, should be able to find some common ground in the amateur radio stuff, particularly with the digital side of that. So I think that every maker fair should have a ham radio presence to it. The one in New Orleans, the Mini Maker Fair in New Orleans, certainly does. The Jefferson Amateur Radio Club has a very, very nice presence at the maker fair, and every maker fair should have a ham radio club presence there. So if you're listening to this and you know that there's a maker fair in your town that does not have any ham radio presence, contact them and see if your club can, you know, put up a table or two, because it will both spread the word of the hobby, and it might even increase the club ranks as well. So that's a good thing on both sides.
Very good. What would you point in your life is your biggest passion regarding amateur radio?
The thing that I have the most time for is VE testing. I'm a VE, and I absolutely love participating in test sessions. I don't get to do too many of them, one or two a year, but that is the most fun. I love being able to go up, shake somebody's hand, give them that CSCE, and say, welcome to the family. Absolutely love that.
That's great. Do you have any idea how many people you've brought into the hobby?
I have no idea. I really couldn't tell you. But a good number. Not as many as a lot. I don't think I'll ever you know, be on the VE honor roll. I don't do that many test sessions a year, but the ones that I do, there's a couple, one in particular in Slidell, Louisiana, that Hamfest is coming up in July, and I make it a point to participate in that test session, and any others who might need the help if I have the time to go out there. But Slidell, I almost always, it's a rare year that I don't participate in that one, so I thoroughly enjoy that one.
Yeah, well, you do a lot to impact the hobby with your amateur radio newsline and Ham Nation. We all appreciate all the hours of work you put into that. And thank you for taking this time today to do this interview, letting us all know how you got into the amateur radio hobby. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that. The amateur radio newsline stuff is extremely fulfilling because I got into it basically just a couple of months after I got licensed, and Bill Pasternak was like an uncle to me. He was just such a mentor and an inspiration to me. And you know, once he passed, I kind of took over the reins and helped keep it together. But I am by no means amateur radio newsline. It's a team effort, and I'm just one of the team. But we have an amazing group of people who put in a lot of hours for absolutely no pay. Same thing with the Ham Nation crew. None of us get paid for that, so it's all volunteer work, and it's all giving back to the hobby that's given so much to us. And we've been blessed by amateur radio so much, and I'm blessed to be surrounded by a great staff at Amateur Radio Newsline, so that it kind of runs itself, and I'm just kind of the most visible person of the team, I guess, because of me being on Ham Nation. But they're a great bunch, and I appreciate them all so much.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. Visit our website at digicomcafe.com to see our extensive digital buffet menu and listen to all of the live conversations on our Cafe on Ice stream. Or this and many more episodes of our Cafe cast.